Hello and welcome to the Punch and Pod episode 11. And today, Oscar, it's a momentous occasion. We've got, instead of audio as well, we've got video here. And we're leveling up, Oscar. How are you for a start, mate?
I'm really good, mate. Really excited to have this new setup. Obviously, we were just saying a minute ago, we're used to the comfort of being at our own homes and not in front of the camera, but we've obviously switched it up a little bit this week, and I'm looking forward to it, mate.
Yeah, I am, to be fair. I'm loving this setup. We are going to a few announcements on the weekend from the Punch and Pod. This will be uploaded actually to our own and brand new YouTube channel, so please go check that out, give it a subscribe, and tell your family, tell your friends. We're trying to obviously set up the YouTube channel and then socials. As we've mentioned a couple of times now, we'll come in turn. But yeah, Oscar, our last episode was what, a couple of weeks ago now, maybe a week ago. But mate, we've been up to quite a lot recently, haven't we, mate? So
we've been busy. So we obviously, something that was just completely new for the both of us. We covered the Joshua Buatsi versus Dan Aziz fight at the Wembley Arena. And, mate, I don't know about you, but it was just a completely just unique experience on my part. I mean, I got backstage access to all the fighters' dressing rooms and was just getting social media content for Boxer, really. But the access that you get with these fighters, and you're speaking with them and you're seeing them on the pads, you're seeing Aziz when he's lost juxtaposed to Buatsi when he's won and he's celebrating. I mean, it was just, an incredible experience, really. How did you find it?
Yeah, as you said, it was a great experience. As we learnt a lot, both me and you working alongside Boxer, who obviously event it was. And I think the stresses of work have made me ill this week. So, if I don't sound my best, I'll try to get through this. But, yeah, as you said, it was really good. I think it was a great opportunity. Actually, as you said, you were down at the event. You were backstage getting videos and up close and personal. And earlier on in the week, we were down at the press conference. I was remote doing a few social clips and running the Twitter and etc. But yeah, it was really good, mate. And especially in terms of a first experience in sort of the behind the scenes of a boxing event, I think it was an event. It was a really big event, especially for a night of British boxing. So yeah, it was really good, mate. And the card delivered as well. To be fair, we had the main event, Buatsi Aziz. We had Ben Whitaker on the card. We had Caroline Dubois. We'll touch on the main event, Buatsi Aziz. I mean, what did you make of it in terms of an event and a fight?
Well, I thought it was a solid main event. Obviously, on paper, when you get two high-level domestic operators, it's always going to deliver. And I think it absolutely did, to be honest. It was the only fight that I really got to watch in full. And obviously, Buatsi, he's a quality fighter. Like, you could tell the levels between them, but Aziz just used his own strengths to make it a competitive fight. He got in on the inside. He tried to make it dirty where he could. He was getting some really effective work off at times, but Buatsi, like, he just stayed behind that jab. And in those later rounds where you saw Aziz was sort of losing his balance a little bit, I felt that he was quite unlucky to finish the fight in that kind of way. Obviously, they were ruled as knockdowns, but effectively he was just slipping on the canvas, which was so just wet the whole night, yeah, it seemed. I mean, they kept getting someone in the ring to try and dry the canvas with what looked like a tea towel. Yeah. And you're thinking to yourself, like, is this really, like, the standard of professional boxing that we're seeing?
Yeah, I don't know what was going on with that canvas. I mean, they were saying it all night how slippy it was, to be fair. But, yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think that in terms of a main event, I think it went the way a lot of people predicted it was gonna go. I think, as I said, we were at the press conference within Fight Week, and they had that for the first time. The live, the gloves are off, and yeah, Dan Azeez and Joshua Boatse, they're very respectful of each other. Obviously, friends before the fight, and now friends after. And I think it was one of those fights where they were both just locked in, focused, ready to go, and they both knew how big of a moment this was for both of their careers. Sort of Dan Azeez, this was sort of a fight where he could really put his name on the map as the next contender to really put a statement down of intent. And for Joshua Boatse, I think it was all about him just doing what he's been doing and sort of getting those wins and keeping up with the momentum. And I think a lot of people, And rightly so, probably had Joshua Boatse favourite going into that. And in terms of how the fight actually went, I think, as you say, I think Dan, as a lot of people said, as we said as well, Dan Azeez had his moments in the fight, and there was that back and forward sort of them going after each other. But I think Joshua Boatse just showed that why he is just that level above, and why he will be in the next the conversations for sort of European ambitions and world title ambitions. But yeah, for Joshua Boatse, I think it was a real a really solid performance. But again, it was a class back and forward British. A proper British fight, as I was saying before the fight, it had all the hallmarks of a very traditional British back and forward title fight, and I think it was very good, mate, and I think it was a overall good card that Boxer put together. I think, as I said, I think we were very privileged as a first experience to be involved in a card like this, and to have the access we did. And sort of the other big names that they had a lot of stars for the future on this card. As we said, Caroline Dubois was on the card, and no bigger star really in terms of the boxing climate at the minute than Ben Whitaker. And what did you make of his performance? Because, I mean, he was starting to build a name for himself before the fight, and after the fight, it's just gone beyond, I think, even his imagination.
Well, Ben Whitaker, after he won silver at the Olympics, the Tokyo Olympics, which he was really quite unhappy about, because obviously he's got that winner's mentality. He wanted gold, but he got silver, and he made that clear to the media after his fight. And he turned professional, and right at the beginning of his right before his debut, he said, "Look, some people are going to love me, some people are going to hate me, but ultimately I'm going to embrace the haters as well as my fans." And that's exactly what he's doing. He's got all of the makings of just an absolute superstar. I mean, he's so reminiscent of Nazim Hamid, who was doing the exact same things back at the early stages of his career. And look, a lot of people complaining of the fact that he's against lower-level opposition. You shouldn't be showboating when you can just beat fighters like that so easily. But he's there to put on a show. I mean, it's an entertainment business at the end of the day, as well as a sport. And even watching Ben Whitaker backstage, like, you could see he's got that professional mindset. He trains meticulously under the tutelage of Sugar Hill Stewart, who's obviously Tyson Fury's trainer. And you can just see a lot of it is just for show, but he's a showman at the end of the day, and that's what's going to attract viewers to his fights, but it's also what's going to build his profile as a fighter. And obviously, like, that's now evident off the back of him gaining 100,000 Instagram followers.
Yeah, I mean, mate, you took the words out of my mouth in terms of it being an entertainment business. I think when you're at sort of the stages of his career, what is he, 7, 8, and 0? When you haven't had that many professional fights, and it is about sort of, okay, it's about getting the win, but I think a lot of people forget about, okay, it's okay racking up these wins, but actually it's all, as we said, it's an entertainment business. It's about how many fans you can get, how many followers you can generate for also the promoter who is promoting you, who is taking a risk having you on their show effectively. So boxers are going to love a guy like Ben Whitaker because they're going to look at him and go, wow, this guy brings X amount of followers, he brings this amount of eyeballs to not only our promotion but his fights. So I think, mate, I love the shithousery, to be fair. I mean, he makes it look easy in there. He dances around, as you said, Prince Nassim-esque. A lot of people have been comparing him to Ben Whitaker. And yeah, I mean, I love it. I'm interested to see where he takes it now in terms of as the level of opposition gets greater and greater, and he is going to be put in there with guys who do pose him a real threat, whether that entertainment style sort of fades away or whether he can keep that consistency in sort of being a bit of a, like he said on TalkSport, being a wind-up merchant. he loves it. And yeah, I mean, mate, I think I saw that he gained X amount of followers just within 24 hours on Instagram, and yeah, he's just a top. He just seems like a top bloke, to be fair.
He was on the ESPN coverage, and I can't remember who it was, but I know there was a really high profile either NFL player or basketball player who was tweeting about him. So now, like, he's even beginning to get his name out into the US, which is obviously difficult place to penetrate in, if you're an athlete, a British athlete. But the sooner you can begin to do that, the better in terms of your profile.
Yeah,
and your 100%.
And the thing is, there's one thing showboating, but there's another thing actually delivering and actually being technically great and getting the finish. And I think when you can do both so successfully, your sort of ceiling is sort of, there's no limits. Do you know what I mean? You have some fighters who talk the talk but don't necessarily walk the walk. And at the minute, Ben Whitaker is doing both and doing both fantastically. So I think, as I said, the sky's the limit for that guy. And honestly, he's a top bloke. And yeah, we wish him well in future fights. And I'm sure Boxer are very keen to have him on future fights. We had Caroline Dubois as well, another young and upcoming woman who is tipped to be one of the greatest boxers if she can carry on with this momentum of all time. A lot of people have said that, and she has a lot of it seems at the minute that sky's the limit for her. So
yeah, Caroline Dubois, I mean, fascinating story really. She sort of plied her trade in the old amateur boxing gyms at Repton and those sort of London-based ones, and everyone says the same thing about her. I mean, she went into these gyms at such a young age. At the time, the gyms wouldn't allow women, like girls, to box. So she went under the name Colin Dubois, I think, and pretended.
I didn't know that.
She pretended to be a boy at the time, and ended up getting better of most of the boys in that gym through sparring.
Yeah.
And now I think with her, it'd be just the biggest shock in the world if she doesn't go on to win a world title and multiple world titles in multiple weight classes, because she's just got that potential. Like, obviously, she's trained by Shane McGuigan, who I feel is the top best British trainer we have right now. And I mean, the work that he's doing with her, but also the ability that she already has through her amateur career, where she won a silver medal at the Olympic Games. I mean, the possibilities, again, with her are just endless. And I think, yeah, really exciting times ahead. She should be fighting for a world title in, if not her next fight, it should be the one after. Because I think she was actually going to be made mandatory for the IBF belt, but now Rhiannon Dixon, who's also in that division, is fighting for that title, so she might go down the WBO route or for another title. But regardless, she'll be a world champion, and she'll be one of the Yeah, one of the figureheads of the sport, I think.
Yeah, I mean, good time to have a second name called Dubois at the minute, isn't it? So, big things coming out of the Dubois family at the minute. So, it'd be interesting to see what she does next. And an announcement on that card, we did have confirmed Fabio Wardley versus Fraser Clark. March 31st. What do you make of that one?
Really good fight, this. Obviously, should have happened last year. We had the purse bids. And obviously, on Fabio's side, where he's promoted by Eddie Hearn and Matchroom, there was that sort of conflict between the two promotional juggernauts. And in the end, it turned into a bit of a PR stunt where Fabio Wardley was just like, Fraser doesn't want the fight. I'm going to fight David Adelaide now. And so he went on and defended his British title against David Adelaide and beat him in spectacular fashion, really. But ultimately, Fraser came off the back of that in a much worse position from when he was before. And this is almost like his opportunity to redeem himself and remind the British public of what he is capable of. And once upon a time, we were talking about Fraser Clark as the next big thing in heavyweight boxing. Yeah. He was a routine sparring partner of Anthony Joshua, a top-level amateur, won bronze at the Olympics. I mean, comparing that to Fabio Wardley, who had just four white-collar fights before he turned professional, this should be a mismatch on paper. But with what Fabio Wardley has done as a professional, you've got a lot of people backing him and not a lot of people backing Fraser Clark. So it would be a really interesting fight given those circumstances.
Yeah, as you said, a lot of people backing Wardley in this fight. I even seen a clip of, I think it was on Boxer's socials actually, of them getting Simon Jordan involved, and it was Fraser Clark asking Simon Jordan, who do you back? And he said actually he backs Fabio. So that's, that's an interesting, that's a really, really interesting fight. And I also liked at the press conference as well that Fabio wore a shirt that said, who's your daddy? And it was a photoshopped image of Ben Shalom pushing a pram of Fraser Clark inside it. So already trying to get in the mind of Fraser Clark. But yeah, again, Bouazzi and Aziz, I think this is a very, very good British fight. And I think shout out to Boxer, I think, and Sky over there. They're putting together very, very good. They're making very good British matchups at the minute. Now, Oscar, there'll be a lot of people screaming about the elephant in the room that we haven't touched on, and we touched on maybe more recent boxing fights. Now, on the fights that haven't happened, that should happened this weekend. Of course, we're talking about Tyson Fury, Alexander Usyk, called off. It was meant to be February 17th. A video's come out now of Tyson Fury having a cut on the eye, actually in the same place as we saw him against Otto Wallin, I believe. The same cut above the eye. We saw a video as well come out. What did you make of all this noise coming out of Fury camp and sort of the video coming out and now the fight being pushed back to the 18th of May? I mean, it seems like the story just keeps on going with Usyk Fury.
Yeah, I mean, it does. But first of all, my initial reaction to the fight being cancelled, I was not surprised, and that's got nothing to do with it being Fury versus Usyk. It's just because I've got to the point in boxing where I almost expect fights to be cancelled at any moment, because this is the game we're dealing with. I mean, people get cut in sparring. It's a very normal occurrence. But it just so happens that before this was released to us, obviously there was rumours about camp not really going to plan for Fury. You had the likes of Johnny Nelson, who was saying that he had sources telling him that Fury wasn't preparing well for Usyk. And I think that's sort of added fuel to the fire, really. Yeah. It's not really helped the situation, where you can obviously see Fury's been badly cut in sparring. And it's not like a shock accident, because, as you said, he had the exact same cut against Otto Wallin. So clearly a lot of scar tissue there, and that's going to require a lot of surgery now. So although we're being told that the fight's going to happen in May, again, it wouldn't surprise me if we didn't end up seeing it in May. And this is the problem we're dealing with now. Yeah. I think Turki Alaj Sheikh has now put stipulations in both of their contracts where if one of them does pull out, then they have to pay, what was it, £100,000 fine or something? Or £1 million fine? I'm not really too sure the amount.
To be fair.
But I know that there's something within that contract that stipulates that. And, yeah, I mean, it still just wouldn't surprise me. Like, I think Fury, in order for him to take the amount of time that he needs to rest and recover from this injury and then go back into another intense training camp, it might take longer than what a lot of people expect.
Yeah, look, the thing is, I think there's no doubt that it was a cut, and there's no issue from my part in terms of it being real or it being fake, as you see these idiots on Twitter sort of saying, oh, it's fake and blah, blah, blah. Look, you can't help getting cut, and cuts do happen, especially when you're training hard like Fury does to a fight like this. And yeah, as I said, cuts happen, and there's not really much you can do about it. But I think the problem lies really when it's kind of just typical Tyson Fury. It's sort of, as you said, it's not a surprise that, oh, now another thing's delaying the Usyk Fury fight, and then another thing, and it just feels like it's one thing after another. And I think the fight was meant to be in December. We didn't get it in December. The fight was now meant to be in February. We didn't get it in February. So now the fight's meant to be 18th of May. But I, as you said, I mean, I'm not going to believe that the Usyk Fury fight's actually going to happen until it actually happens, because I think this is just typical Tyson Fury in terms of, look, it's not his fault getting cut and there's nothing he can do. But when you portray yourself as this fighting man and we'll fight anyone and we'll not duck and we'll not be scared and all of this. But then when things like this start to occur, it's like you're saying one thing but you're doing another. And it's like,
he is a walking contradiction, Fury. I mean, he
and that's the problem. What do you believe as fans? You can say, I love this fight and finally we're getting this fight. But as I said, we're not getting the fight until the bell actually goes and the two men are in the ring. And there's so many rumours out there, as you said, of Fury being dropped in camp and now all of a sudden he has this cut and the fight's off. It's like, it's not a good sign. It's a red flag if I've ever seen one. And look, the fight may happen in May and we may be looking back at him being like, what a fight and blah, blah, blah. But if it doesn't happen, we'll look back at moments like this and go, we should have looked at that moment and gone, okay, that's a red flag.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say it's a red flag, because obviously Karl Froch said in a TalkSport interview that you can tell from the image of Fury's cut that it's taken probably up to a week or 10 days for him to actually reveal this news to the public. With purely just down to the way the cut's scabbed over, there's a lot of bruising there. Obviously, Fury's team have had a hard time trying to find a solution to this, but I think that would explain why there were those rumours coming out of the Fury camp, because they've been sitting on this for about 10 days, and, obviously, it's not a good sign when a fighter gets cut. So yeah. I think that could provide some explanation. But obviously, cuts happen in sparring. It's part of boxing, unfortunately.
The thing is, there's no doubt in the actual cut. And also, I get they have to be really careful about this because, I mean, in the Otto Wallin fight, that fight could have, all the refs would have called that fight off. And if that cut opens up in the Usyk fight, if we ever get the Usyk fight, then Fury is in massive trouble, especially in a fight of that magnitude. So I think, yeah, as you said, they've probably taken time to sort of process the cut and how they want to sort of portray it to the public. But it's Tyson Fury. You're always going to get criticism, especially when it comes to the fights not happening, because of, as we've said, all the noise coming out of the Tyson, the Fury camp, and all the noise about them being proper fighting men and them never ducking any opponents. I just think it just doesn't... Again, it's another one for fight fans to go, that just doesn't sit right. That doesn't sit right with us. And I think it's another sort of obstacle to get over in this Fury-Usyk sort of debacle.
For me, it's just unfortunate that it is happening to Fury, who's obviously, as you said, delayed the fight from December to February. But we all knew that was going to happen. I mean, there was no way he would fight Ngannou, then immediately roll over to December. Like, boxing just doesn't work like that. So I think it's purely just unlucky, the fact that it's Fury who's getting cut.
Yeah, it is unlucky that it is him, and, like, cuts could happen to anyone, like Usyk, whoever. But it's just the fact that it seems to take an age for a Tyson Fury fight to get made nowadays. I think this Usyk dilemma, and I know I've always gone on about how, like, I hate the sort of matchmaking within boxing and how long fights seem to take to get made. But as I said, it's just one of those things where it's another hurdle and then another hurdle. And I think, look, if the fight happens in May, we'll look back at the fight, no matter the outcome, and go, wow, that whole story up to it took way too long, and the cut, and maybe we'll get to May, and I think
if the fight happens in May, people will quickly forget what happened before, because ultimately there's been big fights in history where they've been delayed, they've been rescheduled.
But the thing is, could you imagine if after all of this, Tyson puts up a stinker of a performance like he did against Ngannou, loses to Usyk, then the criticism will be doubled on Tyson in terms of, wow, you took ages to get this fight, it didn't even look like you wanted this fight, and then now it actually happened, you didn't perform up to standards and blah, blah, blah. Obviously, that's hypotheticals in terms of we don't know what's going to happen in the fight, but I just think it adds another level of pressure onto Tyson Fury. I just think it's just, look, as I said, there's nothing he could do about it. But why would you? I don't know. Just, it's just not great. It's just not a good look from the Fury camp, and especially all the noise that's coming out of the Fury camp at the minute. You mentioned Karl Froch there. Well, he's been getting in a bit of a back-and-forward beef with the one and only John Fury. Now, I mean, this wasn't on my 2024 bingo card. But, yeah, John Fury, Karl Froch. I mean, what do you make of all this John Fury? I've never seen, and I think, can't remember who said it. It might have been Froch, but can't remember who said it. But I can't, and I agree, I can't remember a fighter's father being this involved within the media and gives this sort of outspoken views on things. I've never seen it, and I just think, I mean, he's a character, isn't he, this John Fury?
Dads always get involved where if and where they can. I mean, you saw it a lot with Danny Garcia's career. His father, Angel Garcia, was always at the forefront of any media huddle, or he would get the microphone as quickly as he could in any situation. And you've seen it now with Devin Haney's dad. I mean, the way he's navigating the media side of boxing is doing a lot for Devin Haney, who can just focus on his fighting and stay away from that side of the sport. So it's not a new thing, but obviously John Fury is a unique individual, to say the least. I mean, he's not best known for his boxing career, which, let's be honest, didn't actually amount to anything. He's best known as a guy who is not allowed back into America because he gouged someone's eyes out, and he got sent to prison for it. I mean, this is the type of individual we're dealing with. He's an absolute nutcase. But
to put it politely.
But obviously, he does a lot in terms of getting himself in front of the camera, ranting and raving about God knows what. So he somehow got himself into this position where he's calling out Karl Froch, and it's just hilarious, to be honest.
What is he doing? Like, honestly, what is he doing? Because not only is he, in my opinion, and maybe you'll have your own views on this as well, I think he's sort of ruining the Fury brand, and he's not, well, I mean, he's not doing it any good, is he, really? I mean, he's coming out ranting and raving, as you said, in the public. And the thing is, with this now, we've seen within the past year or so that any criticism or comment that anyone seems to make on Tyson Fury and his career and his decisions, they seem to just be getting shut down. And it's almost like you can't criticise Tyson Fury, otherwise you're a hater and you don't know anything about boxing and you just get instantly shut down. And that's not okay. You cannot treat critics. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're Ben Whitaker, an up-and-coming fighter, or you're Tyson Fury and everything he's done within boxing. If you not only don't perform up to standards, which we evidently saw against Francis Ngannou, and then we look back at Tyson Fury's career, if you cannot take criticism and you cannot question someone's fighter, that is not okay, and that is not what we want in the sport. We don't want sort of this. And it's ironic, really, where the Fury camp come out saying, "Oh, you've got an agenda against TalkSport. You've got an agenda against our camp, and they've actually banned TalkSport from events." When actually, if you look at it and go, actually, all the Furies want is people to speak good about them, and anyone who doesn't, they get shut down and they get criticism. And is that the sort of journalism and the sort of media coverage we want within the sport? Because otherwise, what is the point of anyone having any views on a fighter or a fight? And the thing is, that's what we love about boxing and MMA and combat sports. It's so subjective, where we like it when other people have different views on things. Like, you'll have a different view on some fights that I think and my opinions, and that's what we like, sort of these debates. And John Fury, honestly, I think he should look at himself and go, do you know what am I doing, really? And calling out Karl Froch, are you mad? Karl Froch would literally, honestly, wouldn't last 30 seconds with Karl Froch. So, look, George Groves made a comment, and Karl Froch said it himself, where he was clearly joking, but I think you see John Fury now go, do you know what? My son ain't fighting until May. Yeah. Let's see if I can make this sort of monetary value out of this. And instead of beefing Karl Froch and all these other fighters and defending your son, and don't get me wrong, I rate John Fury so much in terms of like his dedication to his son and his love for his son and his defending of his son no matter what. I rate that, and any father should aspire to sort of defend your son that much. But come on, there comes a point where you need to go, okay, look, you guys have your own opinions, but us in the Fury camp, we know what we are. Look, you can have your own opinions, but we're going to show you we're not going to listen to those opinions, and we're going to show you why we are the greatest. But instead, they sort of seem to take this high road and sort of, yeah, just attack any critics. It's just not a good look, really.
I think the Fury camp are very much wrapped in this bubble. They're doing their own thing, and they're not going to listen to criticism, which is fine. Fury's at that level now where hopefully he's got enough people around him whose opinions he actually values, where he can take on board some different viewpoints, some different perspectives. But the problem with that camp is you've got this mouthpiece in John Fury who just keeps ranting on and ranting on. And as you say, the more he talks, the less good he actually does for that
camp. But the thing is, imagine, bro, having that big of an ego to think no one's allowed to criticise you. And I think John Fury and the Fury camp are at that stage where, for whatever reason, they have this ego that, oh, no one can criticise us because we're the heavyweight champion of the world. And it's like, no, that's not how it works. Look, Messi, Ronaldo, Tyson Fury, Tiger Woods, they're the best at their sport, or were the best at their sport, still allowed to criticise them. I don't care if you're the best or the worst. If you perform badly in a fight, or if your sort of career is coming to an end, we're allowed to look back and go, how good really were you? Or where do you rank amongst the greats? I think we're allowed to have that conversation. We just can't instantly go, yeah, Tyson Fury is the greatest, conversation over. I just don't. And that's, I think, the mindset that for some reason the Furies want us to sort of portray. And I just don't think that's fair. And I think in some ways, if we all played to the tune of the Fury camp, we'd be at a stage in boxing where they've just monopolised everyone's views, and Tyson Fury would be held in this, like, god status. And it's, we just, that is not a state in boxing we want to have. And honestly, I don't know what Tyson's saying to John behind the scenes, but it can't be good for his reputation, because not only is Tyson, as we just mentioned, getting slandered for ducking fights and not making fights, but you've also got John, who's making a tit of himself. He's being an embarrassment, really, that now you've got people mocking John and criticising John and criticising the Fury camp about their egos and stuff. So I think when you've got both things sort of put together, as I said, the Fury brand has really taken a hit right now. And especially, look, he's called out Karl Froch, and I don't know what you feel about that. Look, I don't want to see him in there with Karl Froch. I think Karl Froch...
No, it's not going to happen.
Karl Froch destroys him. I mean, you say it's not going to happen. I mean, in this Misfits influencer... You never know. Let's not rule anything out.
I can safely say, hand on heart, that fight will not happen, ever.
The thing is, if it was down to John Fury, I think it'd happen. But credit to Karl Froch, in terms of, he knows John is just in it for the money, and John now is looked at the opportunity and gone, do you know what? Like, I can make a bit of a name for myself. But fair play to Karl Froch. He's gone, look, All the money we make from it's going to charity, and I want to, and Karl Froch actually said, I want to see you in a fight against sort of a Mickey Theo or a John Egan, who, these guys are credible boxers who are over the age of 50, and Karl Froch went, look, go in there against these guys. As you say, you're a fighting man and you'll fight anyone. So go in there, look good, and then I'll think about the fight with you. But, I mean, if we have a fight just Karl Froch, John Fury now, I mean, I don't even know if John Fury could last 30 seconds in the shape he is in. And I know he comes out saying, yeah, we're never gonna duck any fight, and Karl Froch is a shithouse. I'm not being funny. If there's one man qualified to talk on this subject and to question your legacy, I think it's Karl Froch, the amount of titles he's won. A Hall of Famer in Karl Froch. I mean, if he's not qualified, who the hell is? Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, if he's not qualified, we shouldn't have a combat sports podcast, mate. I don't know what John Fury would think of us slandering his name, mate. He wouldn't be very happy.
No, all I can say right now is, if it was my dad going up and saying all yeah. that about me, I mean, I don't know how I'd feel about that.
Probably. I'd say, look, Dad, I like you defending me, but...
But honestly, pack it in, mate.
Pack it in. Seriously. And, mate, John, if you are listening, we're always...
Yeah. We'll have you as a guest.
Come defend yourself, mate. Come
say... We'll give you a right to respond.
What you want to say. But, yeah, I've seen people like Mickey Theo. I don't know if... Do you know about
that? I know about him because John Fury called him out years ago, and then the fight never materialised.
But why?
Shock.
Why didn't the fight materialise?
Because it's all talk with John Fury.
He didn't want it, John Fury.
Well, potentially. I mean, I don't know if Mickey Theo even wanted it. He might have done, but all I can say is, like, this is just talk, and it'll be on to the next cycle of boxing news the next week, and people would have forgot all about it, so... Yeah.
But the thing is, with Mickey Theo, and then I think John Egan went on to... John Egan, a former sparring partner of Mike Tyson, and he has a boxing... he has some boxing credibility as well. He went on True Geordie's podcast and called out John Fury, because John Fury's saying he'll fight anyone over the age of 50. So, okay, do it. I think, and you say, look, we'll, there'll be a next topic next week and whatever. I genuinely think, look, there's an opportunity here. Misfits, there is an opportunity for Misfits.
John Fury would never fight on DAZN.
Do you not think if Misfits...
John Fury
see,
hates...
The thing is, I think he would if the money was right. He even said in his little call-out to Carl Froch, after responding to Carl Froch, he went, look, it has to make business sense. And of course it does. And it's all about that for John Fury. He's saying, oh, I'll fight any man born out of his mother and all of this crap. But then he goes, oh, only if it makes business sense. And it's like, of course. There's like, you say, you're chatting all this, but then when it gets down to it, it has to make business sense. And of course it does. So, but I think if Misfits go to John Fury and go, look, here's the bag, mate. Here's the bag to fight Mickey Theo and John Egan. Then we'll really see what John Fury's really made of. If he is all bark, I mean, it's all right talking the talk, but
I'd love to see him in the ring, but I don't think you'll get him there.
I mean, much like his son, maybe it's a Fury thing. We love you, Tyson. Gotta put that in there, really, because the thing is, look, it might come across that we're Fury haters and. There's this criticism, but genuinely, like Tyson Fury, he is one of my all-time favourites. But I think with this John Fury thing, and now with this cut and all this thing, I do think the Fury brand has just taken a massive hit. I don't know what you feel about it, but I think
yeah, I don't pay too much attention to what John's saying, and I think a lot of the boxing world has started to take that same stance, just because you know whatever's going to come out of John Fury's mouth. You have to take it with a pinch of salt. And it's not necessarily reflective of what Tyson
But then
thinks.
He disrespects Hall of Famers like Carl Froch. And I think that's when it gets... Calling Carl Froch a shithouse and getting personal with boxers who are...
He's allowed to do that. Just because Carl Froch is a Hall of Famer doesn't mean...
No, don't get me wrong. He's allowed to do that. But when you're coming from a place of not really making a name for yourself in the sport and then attacking someone who's a legend, who has won world titles, I think, look, you're allowed to have your opinion, but make sure you have a leg to stand on. Do you know what I mean? And you're attacking Carl Froch for criticising me, or not even criticising. I think Carl Froch was sort of just looking at Tyson's legacy and putting it into perspective with other greats. So when you're saying to Carl Froch, oh, don't talk about my son, blah, 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 and then actually calling him out, I think, come on, you need to look at Carl Froch, look at who he is, look at his legacy and go, if anyone's qualified to speak on your son, it's him. Look, have a go at whoever else for criticising someone, but when you've won that amount of titles and when you're that much of a legend in Carl Froch, come on, like, pack it in. Do you know what I mean? I think it gets to a point where, look, don't disrespect fighters like that, do you know what I mean? And look, I get it, I rate you defending your son, but yeah, I mean, John Fury, and I'm sure we'll get another John Fury quote next week, mate, and we'll probably mention it in the episode as well. So yeah, we'll see how that situation develops, mate, but yeah, from Boaz's ease to Fury Usyk, it's been a mental couple of weeks in the world of boxing. We will have an episode out next week reviewing UFC 298 as well. I know we've focused a lot on boxing this episode, but we've got a lot of MMA content coming up. But for now, Oscar, how have you enjoyed this episode with the new setup? I hope the viewers aren't too startled at seeing our ugly mugs on camera.
Speak for yourself, mate. I think the lighting does us a lot of favours. So yeah, see how the footage comes out afterwards. But no, I've really enjoyed it, mate.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. And as we said at the start of the episode, go check out all the content on the Sports Gazette at the minute. And yeah, go check out the Punch and Pod YouTube channel, which will be up this weekend. But for now, goodbye.